Good morning, everyone. We begin in Afghanistan with a thought about history. Once, it was this nation's longest war, that stalemate and quagmire in Southeast Asia. And then one day, Richard Nixon announced in 1973, it was over.
The agreement on ending the war and restoring peace in Vietnam was initialed by Dr. Henry Kissinger on behalf of the United States and Special Advisor Lee Duc Tho on behalf of the Democratic Republic of Vietnam. Throughout the years of negotiations, we have insisted on peace with honor.
A clear message, a slightly murky and vague demand from the U.S. about peace with honor, but a very clear idea of the opponent, Ho Chi Minh, with his negotiator, with Henry Kissinger, Lee Duc Tho. They were the precise return address for the Vietnam conflict. Whatever the uncertainties of that war, the U.S. always knew who it was dealing with and what their terms were for ending the war.
So keep that in mind and then fast forward to what is now America's longest war, Afghanistan, and the presumed opponent, the Taliban.
My advice to the Americans is, if they love their lives, if their families are suffering from their presence here or their deaths in Afghanistan, they should go. As long as one American remains in Afghanistan, we won't stop our jihad.
Tough talk from a Taliban leader, Mulawi Abdulrahman, speaking this week to our partners, the BBC, as part of an investigation into the confused signals coming from the collection of armed groups that constitutes NATO's opponents in Afghanistan.
On an arduous journey through the famous Khyber Pass, a BBC team met inside Pakistan's rugged mountain region with a leader of another one of those armed groups, Hezbi Islam, or Party of Islam. Speaking exclusively to the BBC, Habib-ur-Rahman seems to think the fighting can stop tomorrow under the right conditions and without a NATO withdrawal.
Talks can be held on the timetable for foreign forces to leave Afghanistan. If they agree to be confined to their bases and give a specified time frame for leaving, then there can be a ceasefire.
A ceasefire? Rahman here is no flaky zealot. He's the son of Hezbi Islam's top leader, Gulbuddin Hekmatyar. Hekmatyar once was handsomely funded by the U.S. to fight the Soviets in Afghanistan, but since the NATO invasion, he has been one of the most powerful warlords confronting U.S. troops, and the U.S. now calls Hekmatyar a global terrorist.
Certainly a mixed signal from the U.S. Yesterday's allies, today's global terrorists. But then consider Afghan President Hamid Karzai. He changed his tune in a meeting with General David Petraeus over the weekend. He now insists that troops reduce their profile in the offensive in Kandahar and other Taliban strongholds.
And we haven't even mentioned al-Qaeda here, who the president has insisted is the U.S.'s ultimate objective in Afghanistan. And finally, there's the part of the Afghanistan conflict that's not even in Afghanistan at all. You're listening to the sound of parading new recruits to the Pakistan Frontier Constabulary, a reminder that they are also in the fight against the Taliban. Ceasefire, not in their playbook right now, according to longtime journalist and AFPAC analyst Ahmed Rashid.
Pakistan does represent an enormous threat, because even if there's peace in Afghanistan, it doesn't mean that that's an end to all these global jihadist groups who are Pakistanis and who are in Pakistan.
So when President Obama sits down with his security team in a few hours to review Afghanistan policy, maybe the most daunting task remains figuring out just who is the opponent, what they might accept as a peace deal, and where the return address is for someone who responsibly speaks for this insurgency in America's longest war.
Joining us now is Michael Semple, an expert on the Taliban, former deputy to the European Union Special Representative for Afghanistan. He's currently a fellow for the Carr Center for Human Rights Policy at Harvard's Kennedy School. He joins us from Cambridge. Michael Semple, good morning.
Good morning.
So let's assess in the few minutes we have here, how difficult is it finding a return address and sorting out the signal from the noise of our opponents in Afghanistan and NATO's opponents in Afghanistan?
Well, it's true that there are several different groups are sort of operating under the same brand name of the Taliban. But it's also very clear that there is, you know, one group is an awful lot bigger and more dangerous than the rest, and that's the Taliban movement led by Mullah Omar.
And do we talk with Mullah Omar if we're going to use the Vietnam analogy? Is there a Lee Duc Tho analogy, a character who would bilaterally negotiate an end to this conflict, or is it much, much more complicated and mushy than that?
Well, it's a bit of both, really. There are several well-known addresses for the main Taliban movement led by Mullah Omar in the traditional Afghan talks. This is the top leader. Never himself actually talks directly. He would normally send envoys. It's always possible to test the credentials of those envoys, see whether they really are members of the top leadership.
Has it ever been tested? I mean, in your experience, have there been signals sent to figure out who a responsible interlocutor would be, either for Mullah Omar or with the Taliban, or ultimately Al-Qaeda?
Well, there have, over the past few years, not been any sort of serious negotiations or even attempts at negotiations. However, in the early days of the U.S. intervention, there definitely were contacts as the U.S. was closing in on Kandahar. At that stage, it was quite possible to work it out. Mullah Omar, he actually designated a person to lead a delegation, went and met with the representatives of Hamid Karzai.
We're talking with Michael Semple, who's an expert on the Taliban. He's a former deputy to the European Union and special representative for Afghanistan. He's at the Kennedy School right now. You know, the thing that confuses me, Michael Semple, before we go, is that either at this security meeting at the White House or this NATO meeting later on this month in Lisbon, Portugal, which will discuss the future of NATO's tactics and strategy in Afghanistan, attempting to negotiate with what Barack Obama says is the adversary in Afghanistan, Al-Qaeda, seems to be off the table. Nobody even talks about it.
Yeah, well, I think that's mainly because there's never really been any suggestion that Al-Qaeda is interested in a negotiation. They're actually interested in sustaining the fight.
So there is no negotiated end, it appears to me, with any clarity, of the Afghan war.
Al-Qaeda can only operate in Afghanistan if it has an alliance with the Taliban movement. Any move towards a negotiated end of the Afghan conflict would be to be splitting Taliban from Al-Qaeda, where Taliban are somehow dealt into the political system at the price of excluding Al-Qaeda. That's the deal.
So no talking with the Taliban, no talking with Al-Qaeda. It's a battlefield or nothing at this point, Michael Semple?
Negative. I think at some stage along the way, there will be talking with Taliban, but working with the Taliban without Al-Qaeda on the basis of trying to split them.
Michael Semple, expert on the Taliban, former deputy to the EU, special representative for Afghanistan. We also thank our partners at the BBC for that look inside the signal and noise in the Taliban.
Since WNYC's first broadcast in 1924, we've been dedicated to creating the kind of content we know the world needs. Since then, New York Public Radio's rigorous journalism has gone on to win a Peabody Award and a DuPont Columbia Award, among others. In addition to this award-winning reporting, your sponsorship also supports inspiring storytelling and extraordinary music that is free and accessible to all. To get in touch and find out more, visit sponsorship.wnyc.org.